Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast. May 25th, 1978, an unexpected explosion at Northwestern University marked the beginning of something that would terrify the nation for nearly two decades. It all started with a package, a seemingly innocuous parcel that didn't seem dangerous at first glance. A university security officer named Terry Marker, doing his job, came across it. Little did he know, the package contained the first bomb created by a man who would soon become known as the Unabomber. When Marker opened it, the device exploded, injuring him. While the bomb was crude, it was also deadly in its intent. This was the first step in Ted Kaczynski's meticulously planned campaign against what he saw as the enemy, modern technology. But why did Kaczynski target Northwestern University? For Kaczynski, the choice was symbolic. Northwestern was one of many academic institutions he held responsible for promoting the kind of technological progress that he believed was destroying human freedom. These institutions, in Kaczynski's mind, were the root of the problem. By targeting them, he was sending a message against the very thing he despised, a modern, technology-driven world. At the time, though, no one realized this was the beginning of a much larger, more sinister campaign. Investigators initially saw this bombing as an isolated event. It wasn't unheard of for universities to experience bomb scares, often related to student protests. Though the first thoughts was that it might have been a prank or protest gone wrong. No one connected this explosion to something larger, something that would soon escalate into a nationwide manhunt for one of the most elusive criminals the FBI had ever pursued. Over the nearly two-decade span of his bombing campaign, Ted Kaczynski's devices evolved from simple, rudimentary constructions to sophisticated, highly lethal weapons. Each bomb he sent represented both a message and a new step in his personal mastery of bomb making. The progression of his techniques reflects his obsessive attention to detail, constant refinement, and increasing commitment to making his devices more effective while eluding detection. This segment breaks down the key elements in the evolution of Kaczynski's bombs and the calculated improvements that kept him one step ahead of law enforcement. Kaczynski's first bombs, such as the one at Northwestern University, were relatively crude. He used basic materials like wood and nails, which made the bombs effective enough to injure, but not to kill. These early designs often malfunctioned or failed to detonate as intended, but they marked the beginning of his technical learning curve. As Kaczynski studied each bomb's effectiveness, he refined his approach. He incorporated new materials, such as metal fragments, and more reliable ignition sources, to create higher impact explosions. He also began experimenting with pipe bombs, giving his devices a stronger container to contain pressure and cause more severe injuries upon detonation. By the mid-80s, Kaczynski's bombs were far deadlier. He added shrapnel to maximize harm, intending not only to spread fear, but ensure his targets would suffer serious injuries or even death. Each bomb became a more precise and destructive tool, designed to maximize impact on both the individual and the broader public. Early bombs relied on simpler ignition mechanisms, which were often unreliable. But as Kaczynski refined his devices, he began incorporating battery-powered circuits and carefully crafted switches. These adjustments ensured that the bomb detonated as intended and allowed him greater control over how and when they would go off. One of Kaczynski's signature developments was the pressure-activated trigger, designed to detonate the bomb as soon as the package was opened or moved. This mechanism required significant skill and precision, as a small misalignment could cause a malfunction. His success with this type of trigger increased the reliability of his bombs and added a psychological layer, as recipients could no longer trust even the simplest actions, like opening mail. Kaczynski knew that sourcing materials could make him traceable, so he went out of his way to avoid standard components. Where most bombers might purchase commercially available materials, he built many parts by hand. This included homemade nails and wooden casings, which were unique to his bombs, and helped him avoid leaving a trail of purchases. Although Kaczynski was meticulous, he often used ordinary materials that were difficult to trace. Items like scrap wood, metal fragments, and basic batteries were easy to find without drawing attention. By using everyday materials, he made it nearly impossible for investigators to identify suppliers or track down his sources. Kaczynski was highly aware of how his bombs would be received. He worked to create packages that wouldn't arouse suspicion. He often disguised his devices as routine items. A package, a piece of mail, or an innocent-looking item that wouldn't seem out of place. For example, he once disguised a bomb as a book intended for a university professor, allowing it to blend seamlessly into an academic environment. To further disguise his bombs, Kaczynski used false return addresses, often choosing random locations to avoid linking the package to himself. This tactic not only delayed investigations, but also added a layer of anonymity, making it even harder for authorities to determine a pattern or locate a starting point. As Kaczynski's devices evolved, he began to include unique markings that investigators would later recognize as his signature. One of his most notable symbols was the engraving of the initials FC on some of his bombs, which stood for Freedom Club. This signature was a clear statement of his ideological intent and marked the bombs as part of a calculated campaign rather than random acts. Kaczynski's attention to detail set his devices apart. He crafted many components by hand, down to the smallest parts of the bomb's casings. Like we mentioned, his handmade nails, intricately carved wooden parts, and unique switches became recognizable elements that eventually helped law enforcement link the bombs together. These details also spoke to his methodical nature and obsessive commitment to his mission, adding a level of consistency to his devices that would ultimately contribute to his capture. Kaczynski took extreme precautions to ensure that his bombs contained no forensic evidence. He wore gloves while handling materials, avoided leaving fingerprints on any components, and minimized any potential biological traces. By doing so, he effectively eliminated any forensic trail, forcing investigators to rely solely on physical evidence from the bomb's components. To prevent even the smallest slip-up, Kaczynski constructed his bombs in his secluded cabin, far removed from prying eyes. This isolation allowed him to avoid surveillance and make it difficult for law enforcement to connect him to any known activities. For building each device, he disposed of any leftover materials or notes, tracing his tracks and ensuring that no evidence could point back to him. Over time, Kaczynski's choice of targets became a clear reflection of his anti-technology views. Initially, his targets appeared random, but as he honed his ideological focus, he targeted universities, airlines, technology-related businesses, with a clear purpose. Each bomb was a message aimed at those he saw as perpetuating the technological society he despised. The evolution in targeting reflecting his ideological escalation. As his campaign progressed, Kaczynski's desire to communicate his views became more pronounced. His letters to media outlets grew more insistent, demanding the publication of his manifesto. His devices were no longer just tools of destruction. They were part of a calculated effort to force the public to confront his anti-technology ideology. The evolving sophistication of his bombs paralleled his intensifying demands, showing that his technical progress was deeply intertwined with his need to spread his message. Kaczynski's evolution from simple early bombs to advanced lethal devices was a testament to his technical skill and obsessive commitment to his mission. This constant adaptation and precision in his bomb-making ultimately enabled him to operate undetected for nearly two decades, leaving behind a chilling legacy of terror, ideological fanaticism. Unabomber's campaign of terror inflicted psychological wounds that reached far beyond the physical injuries his bomb caused. For those who survived, the trauma of opening a seemingly ordinary package only for it to explode in their hands was an experience they would relive for years. Victims like David Glernter, a Yale computer science professor, and others who encountered Kaczynski's bombs described the immediate shock, disbelief, and terror they felt in those moments. Physical injuries, ranging from burns and hearing loss to amputations, left lasting scars. Psychological effects ran even deeper. Many survivors experienced symptoms of PTSD, including flashbacks, anxiety, hypervigilance, which lingered long after their bodies had healed. These victims were left with a constant sense of vulnerability, often developing a lasting fear of receiving packages, which transformed even mundane interactions into reminders of their trauma. The impact wasn't limited to the direct victims. Their families and loved ones were profoundly affected as well. Watching someone close to them endure such an unpredictable and violent attack instilled a lingering sense of insecurity. Families lived with a fear that the Unabomber might target their loved one again, creating a constant undercurrent of dread. Relationships often became strained as families struggled to support survivors through the painful process of physical and psychological recovery. Many families faced their own psychological battles, feeling helpless and fearful, as they too became bound to the memory of the trauma. The ripple effect of Kaczynski's attacks extended into entire communities, where people began to wonder if they too might become targets. As the attacks continued, schools, universities, and workplaces took notice, often implementing new security measures and encouraging vigilance around unfamiliar mail. What was once a simple act of opening a package now became an act fraught with caution, fundamentally altering how people viewed the safety of their daily environments. The media played a significant role in amplifying the public's fear. Each new bombing made headlines, often with sensational details that painted Kaczynski as an elusive mastermind. The term Unabomber quickly became a household name, and media coverage depicted him as a highly intelligent, calculating figure who could strike anywhere, anytime, without warning. This portrayal added an aura of fascination and terror, creating the impression that he was an unstoppable force lurking in the shadows. People across the country followed the news. The anxiety spread nationwide. Even those far from the attack sites began to question the safety of their mail. The possibility of becoming a random target took hold of the public psyche, changing how Americans viewed their own security. When Kaczynski's first bomb detonated at Northwestern University in 1978, injuring a campus police officer, law enforcement was thrust into a confusing and unprecedented case. First, authorities had no reason to believe they were dealing with anything more than an isolated incident. There was no manifesto, no clear motive, and no identifiable suspect. For investigators, the first bomb could have been a prank gone wrong or the work of an amateur experimenting with explosives. Without a sense of Kaczynski's intentions, law enforcement initially treated it as a one-off case, responding locally without suspecting a larger threat. As the bombings continued sporadically over the next few years, law enforcement struggled to understand if there was a pattern or motive behind the attacks. The lack of predictability.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get 6-ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.88 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Cool. Intervals between bombings added to the confusion. Some bombs were separated by years, while others occurred in closer succession, making it difficult for authorities to determine whether they were facing a serial bomber or unrelated incidents. Because of this unpredictability, each new bomb was initially handled as an individual case by local authorities, with few connections being made between them. This fragmented approach delayed the realization that these bombs were all linked to a single perpetrator. Bomb technology was rudimentary in the 1970s and early 80s, making it difficult to trace components back to their source or link multiple devices definitively to the same creator. Kaczynski's carefully constructed his bombs to avoid leaving any physical evidence, avoiding fingerprints, DNA, or identifiable components. Like we mentioned, most of the materials were common and accessible, meaning that even if law enforcement could trace a specific material, it led them nowhere. Investigators found themselves piecing together fragments, with each device revealing a meticulous, handcrafted approach that left no clues behind. This lack of physical evidence forced them to rely on psychological profiling and behavioral analysis. tools that were still under developmental stages and often involved subjective interpretation. As more bombings occurred, the FBI recognized the potential connection and took steps to coordinate the investigation. In 1979, after a bomb detonated on an American Airlines flight, injuring several passengers, the case was elevated to a federal investigation. The FAA joined the effort, suspecting terrorism due to the aviation target. This incident marked a turning point, as the involvement of multiple federal agencies brought new resources and attention to the investigation. However, the multi-agency approach also brought its own challenges. Law enforcement agencies across different regions needed to share information, coordinate their efforts, and establish protocols to handle the cases more efficiently. Despite this federal involvement, progress was slow, and the bombers' anonymity remained intact. It wasn't until the early 80s that the FBI acknowledged the pattern linking the bombings and created the Unabomber Task Force, the name derived from university and airline bomber. The task force was an unprecedented move, bringing together resources from the FBI, F, and local law enforcement. The Unabomber Task Force allowed investigators to systematically analyze each bomb, look for commonalities in bomb construction, and attempt to build a psychological profile of the individual responsible. Despite these efforts, the case was plagued by false leads, as Kaczynski's anonymity and unpredictable methods continued to stump investigators. Without concrete forensic evidence, the Unabomber Task Force leaned heavily on psychological profiling. Behavioral scientists examined Kaczynski's targets, bomb designs, and even his choice of materials, attempting to build a mental picture of the bomber. They speculated that he was a lone, highly intelligent individual with a deep-seated hatred for modern society, possibly an academic or recluse. This profile was a double-edged sword. While it helped to narrow the search and provide valuable insights, it also introduced the risk of pigeonholing the investigation. As the profile was disseminated through law enforcement channels, there was concern that it might be overly specific, possibly missing important leads. The actual Unabomber deviated from slightly from the assumed profile. Investigators faced limitations, not only in forensics science, but also in communication and data management. Before digital databases, information sharing between agencies was manual and often delayed, creating logistical challenges that hindered progress. Each agency maintained its own records, and despite collaboration, the cross-referencing of details could be cumbersome. Kaczynski's sporadic bombings, which were geographically spread out, complicated these efforts. Analyzing patterns in device construction, timing, and victim profiles required time-consuming and labor-intensive efforts that were exacerbated by a lack of real-time data integration. As the years went by with no arrests, the pressure on law enforcement grew intense. Each new bombing brought renewed public fear, intensified media scrutiny, and heightened pressure on the FBI to deliver results. Investigators felt the weight of public expectation and the frustration of repeatedly coming up empty. Internally, the task force grappled with exhaustion and a sense of helplessness as the Unabomber continued to evade them, often striking when investigators were least prepared. This frustration was compounded by the knowledge that Kaczynski was adapting with each new device, learning from his previous bombings and refining his techniques to increase both his bomb's lethality and his own anonymity. In hindsight, the Unabomber investigation became one of the most challenging and frustrating cases in FBI history, requiring a level of coordination, persistence, and adaptability that was unprecedented at the time. Law enforcement faced a nearly invisible adversary, a man who understood both the physical and psychological elements of his crime. Challenges they countered, lack of forensic evidence and technological limitations, the fragmented nature of early investigations highlighted just how unique and elusive Kaczynski was. Despite the Unabomber Task Force formation and the vast resources allocated, Kaczynski's combination of meticulous bomb-making, erratic timing, and obscure motives kept law enforcement guessing for nearly two decades. It was only with the eventual publication of the manifesto and the family tip that the Unabomber's identity would finally be uncovered, a conclusion that eluded even the most dedicated investigators for so many years. The search for the Unabomber was one of the most protracted and complex manhunts in American history. Identifying Kaczynski was a monumental challenge, as he meticulously crafted a strategy to remain undetected, evading law enforcement for nearly two decades. The FBI and other agencies faced a series of daunting obstacles, from an absence of reliable forensic evidence to an erratic bombing schedule and cryptic motives. that made tracking him down feel like an impossible task. Each attack left investigators with more questions than answers, forcing them to rethink conventional investigative tactics and ultimately leading to innovations in profiling and multi-agency collaboration. From the outset, Kaczynski used materials that were nearly impossible to trace. His bombs were... Each attack left investigators with more questions than answers, forcing them to rethink conventional investigative tactics and ultimately leading to innovations in profiling and multi-agency collaboration. From the outset, Kaczynski used materials that were nearly impossible to trace. His bombs were composed of common items, scrap wood, nails, batteries, that he sourced from everyday materials, leaving no commercial purchases or suppliers for law enforcement to investigate. Like we mentioned, he crafted almost every part by hand, creating unique components like switches and even nails to avoid leaving any physical evidence that could be traced back to him. His bombs were meticulously clean, with no fingerprints, DNA, or personal markings, making traditional forensic techniques ineffective. Each device reflected Kaczynski's detailed knowledge of forensic science, his dedication to keeping his identity concealed. The sporadic timing of Kaczynski's attacks further complicated the investigation. Unlike many serial offenders who followed a consistent pattern, Kaczynski's bombings were erratic, sometimes occurring years apart. This unpredictable schedule prevented law enforcement from establishing a pattern or predicting when and where he might strike next. Additionally, his targets were spread across a wide geographic area, from universities and airlines to technology-related businesses, giving investigators no clear geographic pattern to follow. This led to fragmented investigations, with each bomb initially being handled by local authorities as an isolated incident, which delayed the realization that these were connected attacks by the same individual. The first bomb that exploded at Northwestern University was more than a simple act of violence. It was the spark that ignited a campaign of terror, ideological warfare that would haunt the United States for nearly two decades. Kaczynski's first attack wasn't just a reckless or impulsive act. It was the opening move in a meticulously planned campaign against modern technology, industrial society. For Kaczynski, the bomb was a statement, a declaration of his deeply rooted belief that society was on a dangerous path, one that he felt only violence could halt. Northwestern bombing was not just a crime. It was a calculated strike against academia and the technology-driven culture. For Kaczynski, universities were at the heart of the problem. He saw them as incubators for the very technological advancements he believed were stripping people of their freedom, individuality, and humanity. By targeting universities, Kaczynski aimed to hit society where it was most vulnerable, its intellectual core. In his eyes, if he could sow fear in those places of learning, he could disrupt the very progress he despised. But his plan extended beyond any single institution. Kaczynski wanted his bombings to trigger a target or a larger conversation, or rather, a confrontation, about technology and its impact on human life. He didn't just want to terrorize his victims. He wanted to make people question the world they were living in. Every bomb he sent out was meant to challenge society's blind acceptance of technological progress. The Northwestern bombing was only the first step in his strategy to bring his anti-technology ideology to the forefront of public consciousness, forcing people to consider his manifesto's warnings, whether they want to or not. In retrospect, the first bombing in Northwestern was far more than just a physical act of violence. It was a catalyst for a new kind of terror, one that would impact America's sense of safety, its approach to law enforcement, and even its understanding of domestic extremism. Kaczynski's initial attack set off a chain of events that would transform public perception of safety in academic and corporate spaces. Packages, once considered harmless, became potential threats. The simple act of opening mail now carried with it a shadow of fear and uncertainty. By the time investigators fully understood the scope and depth of Kaczynski's campaign, the effects of that first bomb had spread far beyond Northwestern's campus. A seemingly isolated incident had evolved into a haunting campaign that held the entire country in suspense. The first bomb was the opening act in Kaczynski's war against the society he saw as enslaved by technology, setting a new and terrifying standard for ideological extremism. Let me know what you thought about this episode in the comments section below. Is there something we missed? Something we should have included? Let me know. And of course, give us a thumbs up if you like the video. Hit that subscribe button down below. Bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/CNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow. upgrade our equipment, bring new hosts, be able to pay them, and hopefully one day take this show on the road. As always, your support can help make that happen. And of course, you can find us on all major podcast platforms, Spotify, Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, pretty much anywhere you get your cast from, you can find us. And don't forget to leave us a review on Spotify or Good Pods. And with that, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get 6-ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.88 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.